Hello, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Jamie Smith. My partner, Lee Connor, and I would like to thank you for coming and welcome you to Connor Contemporary Art. It's a pleasure to have you all here for this artist talk by Zoe Charlton. Zoe is an accomplished artist and a fine art professor who boldly addresses social stereotypes in drawing, painting, and video. She has shown work with galleries from New York to Los Angeles and throughout Europe. Her work has been exhibited in museums, including the Studio Museum in Harlem and the National Museum of Poland. Her work is currently on view in Cinema Remixed and Reloaded at the Contemporary Art Museum of Houston. We're especially pleased to present Zoe's solo exhibition, Family, and to introduce the artist who will share her creative perspective with us and elucidate the concepts behind these thought-provoking drawings. Please join me in welcoming Ms. Zoe Charlton.
Thank you. Thank you, Lee. Thank you, Jamie. I am really excited about this exhibit. And every time I have an introduction like that, I get really nervous. I think, oh my gosh, wait. Okay, so I usually begin my talks with a photograph, a family photograph of my brother and I when we're 5 years old, but I don't have that, so you'll have to imagine this, okay? So we're about 5 years old, and we're standing next to each other. I'm a twin, and my brother is wearing, do you remember the Halloween costumes with the faces that you could pull down, right? They're plastic. My brother is wearing Casper, and I'm wearing Barbie. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. I looked at my mom, and I said, Mom, why would you allow us to wear these types of costumes? I mean, he was in Casper, and I'm in Barbie. And she said, I couldn't talk you guys out of it. And I thought, you know, now I think, well, that's perfect, because look at my work is really about these sorts of issues. And then my mother said to me, don't ever say that I didn't give you anything. I gave you your content for life. I thought, brilliant. So I say all of this to sort of set up a situation where I could talk about my fascinations with how identity, how personal identity, cultural identity, and social constructions of identity are often at odds with one another. And I have notes because I don't want to forget things. So in general, my work is about identity. And it's about those constructions and how family shapes them. My work usually has an element of humor in it. The joke is really important when I talk about race or sexism. The bodies in my work become sites for me to change, to add objects to, sort of attach objects to, or sort of change the complexions of, or sites where I can investigate sort of a stereotyping. It's about my relationship to sometimes art history, or even complexion, or even suburbia. So some examples of that would be a video that I did a few years ago called Dead White Men is where I've put myself in the positions of white women in paintings from like Boucher or Renoir. And the thing that I find interesting about paintings like that, well, first of all, that's what I studied, is like, how, first of all, how do these women get in these positions? Okay, after you think about that, I say, well, who are these women? Why would they be posing like this? Sometimes they were part of the social elite. Sometimes they were concubines. But it was it's this thing, you know, we all know it's the way that women's bodies have been objectified and sexualized or even racialized. And in another piece called, it's actually called Entitled, and it's of one of my models in a bathtub. And she's bathing, and as she bathes, the water turns darker, but her complexion stays the same. And so what happens is that she's actually removing Mary Kay makeup off of her body. And it's this idea, it references stories that my aunts would tell me about girls that she knew that would rub their skin because they weren't happy with their complexion. And I wanted to do work about that, but have it, but use an activity that's really gentle and soft, like bathing, or about suburbia. And so there's another series of work called Suburban Squatters, where women are attached to or leaning over or sort of in concert with little pink suburban houses. Okay. This body of work is inspired by family stories. It's inspired by my cousins. Growing up, I didn't spend a lot of time with my family when I was growing up. The only time I spent with them was during the summer. I would go to Florida and I would see my grandmother and my uncles. And I never realized that my cousins were around my age because I didn't see them on a regular basis. I had no idea. I thought maybe, you know, there was like this 10-year gap or something. But as I've gotten older, I realized, oh my gosh, you're only 5 years older than me, or you're 3 years older than me. And it's really fascinating. So a few years ago, I attended a family reunion in Miami, and we stayed at a hotel with a lot of statues. There were these sort of Greek-styled statues. And I thought it would be hilarious to take the faces of my cousins and put on these statues and make these drawings out of them. Well, I tried it, and it didn't work out, and it was okay. But I really was attached to this idea of doing work about my family, about my cousins. And the things that I found fascinating were the stories, the stories that I could remember. And mind you, that these are stories that I heard while we were all like, you know, 10, 11, 15. And at this point in my life, they're sort of like, they're mythicized. I really don't know what's actually really true and what's not, right? So a lot of them are exaggerated and some are straightforward. But these are about the stories of my cousins through and their experiences. And what I've done is taken details of those stories and attached to these bodies to sort of talk about their relationship to themselves. Okay, so the drawings again are about lifestyles, they're about loss, and they're about religious commitment. And I'd like to go through a couple of them. So, in the one that's behind you, with the long blue fingernails, and just want to let you know, they're all titled cousin, so it's cousin 1 through 7. Don't ask me which one is which right now, because I would not be able to tell you. But, for instance, that one, I've also nicknamed that one Step-ins, because those underwear, those granny panties, are, I call them Step-ins. And it's an image of a woman with long blue fingernails. And it's of a cousin that is really, she's super religious. She's religious commitment. And it's amazing. It's amazing to me when I meet people that sort of live day in and day out in their sort of religious affirmations. But the thing about her is she holds one thing, there's one thing about herself that she will not give up, and it's these nails. I mean, it's like that one attachment to this vanity, and they're always decorated. They're beautiful. And she's praying, and then you see these glistening nails. And oftentimes, the tips of them are decorated in gold, and sometimes there are clouds on them and crosses in them. And I found that really interesting because it seems like such a contradiction to this commitment, this religious commitment, and then this commitment to this sort of material, this material thing, right? The one that's next to it is of a cousin who actually has a lot of children. She has 5 kids. But in this one, I've decided to put 5 birth control patches on her because it is the opposite. It seems to be the opposite. And she also has a nun's habit on her head, and the colors are reversed because it's this idea of, you know, this sort of, and she's also Catholic. So it's this idea that I am not going to use birth control because I want to have a lot of children, or, you know, I'm going to let that happen, but I can't take care of all these kids. So it's a contradiction. And so a lot of the pieces are about those types of contradictions. Let's see. And I'm trying to think of which one I should talk about next. Which one should I talk about, you guys? This one. Okay. All right. So this is the largest one, and I love this piece. And I decided, I sort of toyed with the idea of, like, do I tell the story or do I not tell the story? And I decided that I would. I have two cousins and their sisters, and they had an extremely horrible experience while they were growing up. Their mother was killed. Their mother was murdered. And for a long time, I wanted to make work about them, and I didn't know how. And I thought, the only way that I could do it without sensationalizing it, because it's not something that needs to be sensationalized, is to really talk about this idea of loss. So I put them in these sort of these poses. One pose, one figure is has this sort of gesture of, like, she's almost getting up, it's this anticipation, and the other one is just sort of sitting. But the other thing that happens in this work, in this drawing, is that their foreheads are raised. And I was actually thinking about the Elizabethan women that will shave their foreheads high. And there's something very elegant about that. And I wanted to draw them with these foreheads because there's something very elegant about the way that they've lived their lives with this difficult history. And to me, they are models of how I can experience really difficult things, but to keep an amount of sort of composure intact. And so that's this piece. And and I've smudged their eyes out because it's part of that history of not being able to sort of how do you? It's something that they've seen, you know. So how do you sort of, like, you try to rub that out, and you can't rub that out. You can never get away from, they can never get away from that memory. So, I'm going to stop and see if you guys have any questions before I talk about something else. Yes?
Talk about, you started saying that they lost their mother.
Uh-huh.
I saw the loss of the women that way as well.
You know,
what did that mean for you to have
that? A lot of times in my drawings, I will not draw complete body parts, and that's usually a point of emphasis, so that the gesture of the hand is really emphasized or and made more meaningful. But this foot is so detached, you know, like, how do you, and I'm really glad that you said that, because it really is about them sort of having to walk ahead or... So this sort of dangling foot is a metaphor for being sort of separated from one's body and also trying to sort of get ahead at the same time. And also this exposing of the sole of the foot, which is a very tender part of your body, but it can also, at the same time, it can be extremely calloused at the same time, but this is a very delicate foot. And so there's something very tender about it that sort of, it butts up against the frame. It at one, some points looks like an afterthought. But it really is about this foot or this sort of trek becomes also another figure in the composition. Yes?
Can I ask you a little bit about the process?
Uh-huh.
How you work on those, whether you photograph them first, uh-huh, and whether you start with the small drawings, because mm-hmm, I'm probably on the wall with your small work.
Right, right.
And how do you enact this particular scale?
Okay. Okay. So the question is about my process. So how do I go about my process? Do I photograph? Because a lot of the work that Lynn has seen is some of my smaller work. Well, this body, I work from life. I work from life. And I've gone through times when I've worked from photographs exclusively, and then from photographs and incorporated some element of sort of life drawing. But all of this work is from life, and the last few years I've only worked from life. So my process is this. I decide on a pose. I think about a general pose, like I want a sort of a praying pose. And I invite my models in, and I say, okay, this is what I want you to do, so I need you to do everything that's associated with it. I just want you to move around. And I have a turntable in my studio, and it's kind of an old school turntable where I have a rope and I can twist them around. And so they sit there and they do different things. They move around and I stop them and I say, that's it. and then I'll take a photograph, and then I'll move them around, and I'll stop them and look at it again, right, and take a photograph. And at the end of the modeling session, what I do is I print them all out, and the model and I will look at them together, and we will decide what image works, which works best for the idea. And I do this in collaboration with the model because any pose that I choose, I need them to feel comfortable in that position. And when we decide on a pose, then we set up 5-6 days for them to come to the studio 3 hours at a time for me to draw. So I don't work on these unless I have a body in front of me. And what really becomes important is the expressions on their faces and what they can actually do with their bodies, because it really is about them expressing this sort of state of mind or sort of physical state. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the piece, the blue nail piece.
Yes.
Did she pose nude for you?
Yes, she did. She did. Yes. All of my models pose nude.
Very interesting. The religious pieces.
Yeah. All my models pose nude. I get all my models from Craigslist. I just put an ad and say, hey, I'm an artist, I need so-and-so to do this, 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 and this. And I never say nude. But when they call me, I say, okay, this is what I do. And then we meet, and I show them examples of my work, and then they all get it. They're like, are you going to have me do that with my butt in the air? Because usually that's what happens. And no, not for this body of work. And yes, so they all pose nude. And all the props that you see are props that I have in my studio. And except for this crown, that's exaggerated. I don't have a crown that tall. But yeah, they all pose nude. Yes.
So are they symbolic of your family?
They are.
Rather than
theological. Exactly. They're symbolic of my family. Yes. No. No. I don't. Because I'm committed to drawing.
Yeah.
I've never had anyone ask me to just do a straight out painting. No. And I think that's a testament to people's understanding of the real value of drawing. And also because it's a really sort of popular thing to do these days, you know. But no, I haven't. Mm-mm. And when I made a decision not to paint anymore, it was such a big deal because I come from a painting background. And when I first started drawing, when I started thinking about these drawings like this, they were always sketches for paintings. They were always sketches for these larger paintings. And I had this experience, this epiphany, where I walked into my studio and I saw like 80 drawings on my wall, on my studio wall. And I thought, I think that this is the work. I could never, never get this with painting. Just in terms of like the type of sort of the emotive quality of the line, the connection to sort of a thought process.
Exactly.
And then the time.
What about breath, emotion coming out of the hand?
Well,
I mean, it's hard to hide, isn't it?
It is hard to hide. It is very, very difficult to hide. I mean, without sounding overly romantic about the process, I can't imagine doing this work in any other way. Period. I can't. You know, it just seems like it makes so much sense.
It does.
Good. Thank you. No, not yet. No. So, I wanted to actually ask you about the relationships that you make from the objects, the things that the figures have, and then the objects that they're wearing. What are some of those relationships or the stories that you can create, that you create from them? I don't mean to put you guys on the spot. Could you tell?
With the feet bound, uh-huh. The dancer, the point, I'd love to hear the story.
Okay, well, that's really interesting. I like that you understood that those feet are bound. They're actually bound in leather, and that is of a cousin. It symbolizes a cousin who farmed. And she is a cousin that was raised by my grandmother, who had a farm behind her house. And so every summer they would go out to their farm and they'd plant and pick. And I, forever the suburbanite, thought, you have got to be kidding. But the thing that was really interesting is they would always wear these kerchiefs. And my reference for kerchiefs is so specific, mm-hmm. You know, because I didn't grow up with that type of image. But the reference that I have are, you know, images of Mammy, right? And I asked my grandmother, my cousin, like, why do you wear your hair like this? And it was this easy of an answer. To keep our hair out of the way. Come on. It keeps the dirt out of our hair. It makes so much sense. But as a young person, I didn't know. So I was really thinking about that. And I thought, well, you know, why not? Let's give her a huge head of hair. And let's just sort of tie it back or keep it up with this red bandana. And what the figure is also doing is poking holes in the ground, and there are little plants that are coming out of it. And the other thing that I find important about that piece is that she has a farmer's tan. And the farmer's tan is around her neck and on her arm. And I always thought that that was an interesting thing because my grandmother always had a farmer's tan. And I loved it. And I'm fascinated with tans on bodies like mine, on black bodies.
Where was your grandmother growing up?
Florida.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about this one, Billy.
Okay. So, this drawing is nicknamed Rug Burn. There had at one point been a little bit of a stain on her knees. But it's about, it symbolizes a cousin that was very promiscuous at a young age. And what I, in order to talk about that, what I decided to do is put knee pads on her. And a couple of birth control patches. But also put these ribbons around her shoulders, because there's this innocence, there's this sort of fluffy innocence and sort of youthfulness that's by her head, and also with her puffball hairstyle. But it really is about this, it's in one hand, you know, these are the experiences that a lot of young women have, and on the other hand, you know, it's something that is sort of a joke. You know, we all laugh at it, we pick at it, you know, there's music about it. And I also realized, oh my gosh, I remember hearing stories about this while I was growing up. And, you know, some of us would, my cousins and I would like snicker, you know, like, oh my God, can you believe that? As an adult, I think like, oh my goodness, what was actually going on while they were growing up that led to decisions like this, you know? You know, so that's the story behind this drawing. Yes. Yeah. So my family says a lot of mixed things about my work in general. My favorite story is sitting in Cracker Barrel with my mother and my aunt and them saying, do they have to be nude? Oh, come on. But they're really excited about this body of work. They're really, really happy that I'm making work about my family. And this happens to be sort of the body of work that they can actually show their friends, because it's not as extreme as it usually is. And they're really happy because it's a way for me to talk with them about these stories and actually find out some stuff. So they sort of see me as sort of like mining. I'm like getting information from them. I'm really interested in what they have to say in these stories. And then they get to write the stories. They get to say, well, they get to like correct them. They get to say, oh, actually, no, that's not what was happening. Wow, that's what you were thinking. Oh, okay, well, let me tell you the full background of this. And so it's a really great experience because we're able to bond over basically a misconception or a misinterpretation of history. Kind of, sort of. Well, this is probably not the best type of historian that I could be, you know. But in a sense, yeah. Yeah.
So that one piece you haven't really talked about is the first piece on the wall. You get a lot of comments about.
You get a lot of comments about. Yeah, last night somebody made a funny comment about it. That, you know, it's so funny. It's like, I will do work like this, and it always surprises me that, like, I'm right now, I'm getting kind of embarrassed. I don't know why. So this is about this is about a cousin who has always made herself available. She's always made herself available to men, and that's the relationship that she has with men. She doesn't know any other way to be, and so she has her gold hoops because it's something that she always wears. But above her is this iridescent cloud. And she's always hopeful for this, like, the all-important guy to come into her life. She's waiting, she's available, and waiting, and available. And so it seems like there's this contradiction that's happening. It seems like a contradiction, you know? So that's that piece. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Going off of what you just said, Leah, that's why I love these large pieces, because you have such a great hand. Your hand is beautiful. And it's seeing the large pieces, you really get to show that, and it comes through. So I'm very happy that you've gone to a larger scale.
Thank you. I will continue to get that paper.
Are there any other questions for Zoe?
Queen. She's a princess. She is she's a queen, a princess. So I have a cousin that's really delicate. Everybody loves her. She's beautiful. She's beautiful. And she has such a really wonderful personality. But because we all adore her, she's like a prima donna. It's kind of crazy. But she also has this sort of devilish streak, which is why she's wearing red nails. But she always has this sort of doleful look on her face. And we're like, what's wrong? Are you okay? And then she's like, well, nothing is wrong, but I just thought that I would tell you, da-da-da-da-da. And so it's really amazing to hear her talk like that. But that's the princess, the queen piece. You guys have any other questions?
Yes.
For saying that.
It means everybody has, no matter what their backgrounds are.
Thank you for saying that.
That's how it feels. Thank you very much.
Thank you guys for coming. Drink some champagne. Thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
Thank you.